thing I'm not hungry. What I am, though, is desperate for one of Simon's frothy soy milk lattes. I don't have a lot of vices, but my regular dose of caffeine in the morning is number one on a short list. On the rarest of occasions that I miss my fix, I could count those days on one hand, my head is throbbing by midday. 5 years ago, Simon surprised us at Christmas with a fancy barista machine that can rival Starbucks. I swear, he sits at the breakfast bar every morning with his cup of Earl Grey and his Globe and Mail and listens for the first creak of steps from the third floor just so he can hit brew. By the time I'm staggering down to the kitchen half asleep, he's sliding a hot mug into my hands. To keep the Kraken at bay, he claims, though I'm pretty sure it has more to do with his secret fascination with the frother. A pang of homesickness stirs inside me, but I push it aside, focusing on the matter at hand. This Myers place doesn't open for another 2.5 hours. That means I have time to kill while I figure out how I'm going to get there so I can survive this day. Beads of sweat trickle down my face as I pause for a gulp of water and to catch my breath, my gaze landing on my father's mossy green home in the distance. I lasted 20 minutes in that eerily, quiet, uncomfortable house with nothing but my tense thoughts and my laptop before my disquiet forced me out. Throwing on my running gear and investigating my surroundings seemed like as good an excuse for an escape as any. I can see Agnes's house in the distance, too. It's like a mirror image of my father's house. Same size, same distance from the road, same wooden porch leading up to the door, except it's white, and there's no truck in the driveway. It was already gone when I ventured out. I assume she's at work, too. The mileage tracker on my phone claims I've run 10 kilometers, and I haven't lost sight of either house this entire time. There's been little to obstruct the view. Fields of low bushes and a few scattered houses, and not another living soul to distract my focus. Not a single person driving by or riding a tractor or walking their dog. Not even an echoing bark to carry through the stillness. It's unsettling. I'm so used to the constant flow of people, the blasts of horns and roars of engines, and the clatter of construction. It's white noise for me, and I've come to need it as I need the rhythmic waves of an app to sleep. Add the fact that I don't have a working phone, and I feel completely cut off from the world out here. How can anyone find this peaceful? Ow! I slap my thigh, leaving a squashed, tiny corpse clinging to my skin where my palm made contact. The mosquitoes have been relentless all morning, swarming my damp, bare flesh. A second and third pinch on my arms and calves gets me running once again. That seems to be the only way for some respite. I keep a steady, solid pace along the road, the rhythmic pounding of my running shoes against dirt the only sound until a low, familiar buzz catches my ear. A yellow charter plane climbs the sky above me, leveling off just below the thick layer of tufted clouds the color of sheep's wool, the kind that promise rain at any moment. I can't discern the logo on the side of the plane, but it could very well be an Alaska Wild charter. It could very well be my dad. Trying to get as far away from his daughter as possible. Can he see me down here in my hot pink running outfit and matching running shoes? At least they used to be pink. Now they're covered in mud splatter thanks to the dirty roads. A week of this place and I might as well toss them onto the Davisville subway station tracks to join the others. The plane fades into the distance and once again I'm completely alone. Just me and a million blood-sucking mosquitoes. Up ahead is a cluster of shed-like buildings surrounded by a low, spindly hedge. They're all shapes and sizes, all with ruby-red roofs. A few look like houses, but others look like barns. But for what? My mom insisted that nothing can grow in this climate. As I get closer, I see the clear structures set up behind the buildings. They're definitely greenhouses. There are pickup trucks and tractors and garden patches scattered throughout, with rows of vegetation. Some are covered with white plastic, others with white semicircular hoops lining them. And beyond are fields of vegetables, rows upon rows of heads of lettuce and tall stalks of green onions and chartreuse carrot fronds, and things I can't discern from here. Two people toil around a lemon-yellow barrel, hoses in hand. There is life out here after all. And things to grow. Either the soil has changed drastically in 24 years, or my mother was wrong about the barren wasteland. Or maybe she gave up on growing things in Alaska before ever trying. A sharp pinch pricks me, and, quick as a swatter, my hand flies up to slap against my neck. I cringe as three squashed mosquitoes cling to my hand and then take off at a clipped pace, desperate for sanctuary from the bugs and a long hot shower. And then I guess I'll have to wait until someone gives a damn that I'm here and checks in on me. What are the chances that a cop would pull me over around here anyway? I consider this as I peer out the kitchen window at my dad's pickup, the dull ache behind my eyes from lack of caffeine quickly growing into a gnawing throb. I felt it coming a half hour ago and attempted to choke down a mug of black coffee out of desperation. I gave up after three sips and then spent 10 minutes scrubbing the bitter taste out of my mouth with my toothbrush, unable to swallow any more. To make matters worse, my stomach is now growling in protest, and my heart is being tested by the raw reality that I am one right turn, one left turn, or 5 miles per the note, from civilization, and I've been all but abandoned by my father. Agnes was wrong. Today is not better. I check my Uber app. No cars available in my area. With gritted teeth, I Google the number to Wild Alaska's main line. Because, of course, my dad didn't think to leave me his contact number. Agnes answers on the third ring. It's Calla. Oh, good morning. How was your sleep? Fine. Is my dad there? No. He took off a little while ago, on his way up to Barrow to check on things. Won't be back until this afternoon. There's a pause. He said he left you the truck, though, so you could go into town. I don't have my license. Oh. I can almost see the deep frown lines in her forehead. So you're stuck there. Pretty much, with nothing to eat. I don't bother hiding the irritation from my voice. Okay. Well, let's see. I hear papers shuffling in the background. Sharon can cover for me while I drive you in. Perfect. She'll be in at noon. Noon? I don't know who Sharon is, but I can do math, and noon means 4 o'clock Toronto time. I'll be dead by then. Oh, wait. You know what? Jonah has a late start today. He'll drive you into town. Jonah? I feel my face twist in disgust. She's got to be kidding me. Is his truck still in the driveway? My disgust morphs to suspicion. What do you mean, in the driveway? Next door. I dart to the window to spy the neighboring house maybe 50 feet away. It's another simple and quiet modular home, clad in butter-yellow siding that could use a power wash. My eyebrows pop. Jonah lives next door? Is he still there? There's a forest green SUV parked out front, but no signs of life otherwise. Okay, good. Run on over and ask him to take you to Myers. This keeps getting better by the minute. He doesn't want to drive me anywhere, I grumble, and the absolute last thing I want to do is ask him for a favor. He'll drive you. She sounds confident. I note, though, that she doesn't argue about his lack of desire. And then what? Abandon me there? You know he took that tiny plane yesterday on purpose, don't you? There's a long pause. Jonah likes to play little games sometimes. Keeps himself from getting bored. Agnes's soft chuckle fills my ear. But he's a teddy bear. And don't worry, I've already talked to Billy. He's putting your suitcases on the caravan flying in this afternoon. I heave a sigh of relief. Finally, some good news. Ask Jonah for a ride into town. It'd be good for you two to get along. He and your dad, they're close. And don't be afraid to put him in his place. He can get as well as he gives. I gaze warily across the lawn again. Or wait until I can come get you at noon. Up to you. Ask the angry Yeti for help or starve to death. The latter may be less painful. Oh, And you and Ren are coming for dinner tonight. I hope that's okay. Sure, if I survive that long. Before I can think too much about it, I stuff the cash my dad left into my purse, slip on my wedge heels, grab my sunglasses, and march out the door. I'm dressed smartly in jeans and a fitted lightweight navy sweater, yet the mosquitoes swarm me all the same, forcing me into a mad rush past the truck and through the wet grass. My feet sink into the marshy ground with each step, and by the time I've made it to the small wooden porch off the front of the house, my toes are soaked and uncomfortable, the soles of my shoes squishy and most certainly ruined. Just another reminder that I don't have my rain boots thanks to the jackass I'm about to ask for help from. I struggle to remove the sour look from my face as I wrap my knuckles against the solid white door. After a good 10 seconds, I knock harder.
"Hold on a second,"
that gruff voice calls out. Heavy footfalls sound, and then a moment later the door is yanked open, and Jonah fills the doorway, halfway through sliding his shirt down over his stomach. I flounder for a moment. Jonah isn't much older than I am, I realize, now that he's not disguised behind a ball cap and sunglasses. Early 30s, maybe, with only the faintest of lines creasing his brow. His hair hangs long, damp, and scraggly to his jawline, the ends tattered as if not touched by a pair of scissors in years. He's not as bulky as his jacket made him look yesterday, either. Or rather, he's big, but he's surprisingly fit, as just made evident by the glimpse I caught of a ribbed torso before his black shirt hid the pleasant sight away. But it's his eyes that are the most jarring to me. They are piercing in their hard gaze, but his irises are the lightest, prettiest shade of ice blue I've ever seen on a man. Beneath all that unkempt hair, Jonah is actually attractive.
"Calla."
I startle.
"Did you need something?"
he asks slowly, in an irritated way, a way that tells me I missed his words the first time, too busy gawking at him. Too bad those pretty eyes come with that callous tongue. I clear my voice. "I need you to take me into town." His gaze flickers toward my dad's house.
"What's wrong with Ren's truck?"
"Nothing, but I don't have my license." His bushy brows pop.
"You're kidding me. You're how old and you don't have your license?"
"I've never needed it," I say defensively. A slow, knowing smirk touches his lips.
"You get everyone else to drive you around, don't you?"
"No, I live in a city with public transit. Do you know what that is?" I snap, my temper flaring instantly. Something that doesn't normally happen with strangers. Sure, when I do leave Toronto, it's at the mercy of someone else. My mom, or Simon, Diana, or a slew of other friends who have cars. But there's nothing wrong with that, and it's beside the point anyway. I knew coming to Jonah was a mistake. You know what? Never mind. I'll drive myself. Thanks so much. Spinning on my heels, I march down the steps and across the lawn, heading straight for my dad's truck. I yank the door shut behind me and spend a few moments in a murderous rage, my hands flailing about wildly, smacking the glass, the dashboard, and myself, killing the small horde of mosquitoes that followed me inside. Not until I'm sure every last one is squashed do I let myself settle back into the driver's seat with a huff of grim satisfaction, fingers curling around the bottom of the steering wheel. It smells like tobacco in here. There's no evidence, no butts in a cup, no empty cardboard cast aside. Not even that thin plastic strip that seals a fresh pack. But I can smell the cigarettes all the same, the smoke permeated into the worn fabric of the seats. The keys are right where my dad said they'd be, sitting in the ignition, waiting for me or anyone else to hop in and drive away. The threat of anyone else is clearly low. I could drive into town. It's two turns, his note said. An empty dirt road that probably leads into a paved one. A few stop signs, some lights. Green means go, red means stop. It's not rocket science, and I've been a passenger enough that I can figure this out. Crap. I eye the gear stick jutting out of the floor with dismay. It's a standard transmission. That is something I can't figure out, no matter how many times I've ridden shotgun. I let my head fall back as a loud groan escapes my lips. All this open space around me, and I'm trapped. The passenger side door opens. Jonah slings his arm over the top.
Why do you need me to drive you into town?
His tone is still gruff, but less confrontational. Because there's nothing to eat in that house.
Nothing at all?
He smirks. Nothing, I snap, more from frustration than anything else. Spoiled milk and ketchup. My dad left money and a note and took off before I was even awake, and Agnes can't come until noon. My head is throbbing because I haven't had a coffee yet, and I'm starving. And in an increasingly foul mood.
That's not dramatic at all,
Jonah mumbles, glancing at his watch and then to the east where a plane descends. He heaves a sigh.
Learn how to ask next time.
I did ask.
No, that was closer to a demand, and I don't respond well to those.
I glare at him as I mentally replay my exact words. I asked, didn't I? Maybe not.
Well?
Those icy blue eyes widen.
I don't have a lot of time, and you better make it quick because I've got a full day of flying if the weather cooperates.
He slams the door and begins trudging back across the road. With equal amounts of relief and trepidation, I hop out and follow him all the way to his SUV, a boxy older model, forest green Ford Escape, that's missing the tailgate tire but is in otherwise decent condition. With the same surprisingly lithe, sleek movements that I noticed yesterday, he retrieves that black baseball cap from the back seat, the one from yesterday with the letters USAF scrawled across the front in white. With one hand holding his long, scraggly hair back, he slides it onto his head, and then he gets behind the steering wheel. I climb into the passenger seat, inhaling the faint scent of spearmint gum as he adjusts the vents and turns a dial for the heat on the console, bringing a small gust of warmth into the chilly, dated interior. How old is Jonah's car, anyway? I can't remember the last time I was in a car that had a handle on the door to crank the window. A mosquito floats in front of my face. Are they always this bad? I clap my hands together to squash it in my palm.
They don't bother me.
They ate me alive this morning.
Maybe try putting on clothes next time you go running.
My mouth drops open. There's nothing wrong with what I run in. Granted, my shorts are short and snug for comfort. So is the tank top. And the outfit works better along city streets that aren't infested with bugs, so I guess I can see his point. Not that I'll ever admit that to him. And wait a minute. Were you spying on me? He snorts.
I happened to look out the window to see you running up the driveway in clothes that leave nothing to the imagination, flailing your hands like a madwoman.
He throws his SUV into drive, and we coast along the bumpy driveway in loaded silence. My cheeks burning. Thanks for driving me, I finally offer. He might not be thrilled about it, but at least he is helping me. I get only a small grunt in response, and then...
Why haven't you had a coffee yet? Ren always makes a full pot and leaves it on. You couldn't just pour yourself a cup?
Why does everything out of his mouth sound like a direct assault? I need soy milk.
Of course you do.
He mutters. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but I'm guessing it's not flattering. We ride the rest of the way into town in silence. Bangor, town of 6,500 and the largest community in western Alaska, is a shithole. At least, that's my first impression. I bite my tongue against the urge to say as much as we drive along a snaking main road, passing intersections with street signs for more rural roads. Some gravel, others with asphalt that's so badly cracked they'd have been better off leaving it unpaved. Single and double-story buildings are scattered along either side. They remind me of the ones from the airport, rectangular and clad in siding, topped with metal sheets. Some are drab creams and browns. Others are weathered peacock blues and emerald greens. Where there are windows, they are disproportionately small. Meanwhile, some have no windows at all. And all of them are connected by silver pipes that run along the grassy ground from one property to the next. Is this an industrial area?
Nope.
I stifle the urge to roll my eyes, Jonah's second favorite word behind yup. We pass by one property that has a playground set erected in the yard. Two young children dangle from monkey bars as a husky sits on its haunches, looking on, no parents in sight. Many of these buildings are family homes, I realize, now noticing the bicycles lying on lawns and baseball bats propped against walls, and a lopsided trampoline. Homes with not a shred of curb appeal. No leading walkways or pleasing gardens, no welcoming front entrance, only scraggly shrubs and dust-covered ATVs, and unsightly cylindrical tanks. It's because we're on the outskirts, I convince myself, as Jonah takes me farther into this town in the middle of nowhere, with no roads connecting it to the rest of Alaska. We'll come across a visage that I'm more familiar with. Actual neighborhoods with brick houses and driveways lined with daylilies and rosebushes. A main street with some degree of city planning, with proper storefronts and decorative street lamps, and people dressed in something other than value brand jeans and plain cotton shirts. Areas where there aren't spray-painted dumpsters on every corner like the one we just passed, decorated with rainbows and suns and banger is the best messages. Meanwhile, the streets are littered with debris that's been dragged through the weedy grass by animals. The farther in we drive, though, the less confident I become. Thank you, Mother, for getting us the hell out of here when you did. There aren't even sidewalks along the streets. Everywhere I look, I see people walking along the ditch at an unhurried pace. Some carry brown paper grocery bags, most don rubber boots or hiking-type shoes, and seem unconcerned about stepping in muddy puddles or the spots of dirt spattering their pants. They're of all ages, some as young as 10 or 11, one an elderly Alaska Native man whose limp is so pronounced he should be walking with a cane. He's going to fall and hurt himself, I murmur, more to myself, not expecting a response from Jonah beyond maybe a grunt.
Yupik people are tough. That man probably walks 3 miles every day.
I frown. What people?
Yupik. Some are Athabascan or Aleut.
Jonah makes a left turn.
The villages that we fly into are mostly Yupik communities.
Is that what Agnes is?
Yep. She grew up in a village up the river. Her mom and brother are still there, living a subsistence lifestyle.
He adds quickly, perhaps after seeing my frown,
they live off the land.
Oh, so sort of like farm to table? Unlike all the other exchanges I've had with Jonah, I feel like I'm getting useful information about Western Alaska.
Sure. If you want to compare an entire culture's way of life to the latest culinary trend,
he murmurs dryly. I study the faces of people as we pass them. About half of them are Alaska natives, while the other half are Caucasian, except for one East Indian who's standing next to a battered Tahoma with its hood propped up and steam swirling from its engine. What are those people doing? I point to three men in their 20s trudging along the road, two supporting either end of a mattress, the third carrying an awkward-looking box. A woman walks about 10 feet ahead with a lamp in one hand and a toddler perched on her hip.
My guess would be moving.
By foot?
They're probably just shifting a block or two. People don't want to burn gas for that. Not at almost $7 a gallon.
I take it that's a lot, I hazard, quickly adding, we pay in liters. Not that I could gauge the value in any measurement, but I'm tired of feeling like an idiot in front of Jonah. Jonah lifts a hand in casual greeting at a passing man on an ATV.
Double the gas price in Anchorage. Almost three times as much as the lower 48.
The lower 48? Do I dare ask? Or will that earn me another dry, thinly veiled, you are so ignorant response? I reach for my phone to Google the term, but then my hand freezes as I remember my phone doesn't work here.
That's what we call the rest of America,
Jonah murmurs, as if able to read my mind.
Up here, all our fuel comes in on a barge, and then gets dumped into a fuel farm for storage or carried up the river to the villages in smaller boats. That's a lot of added cost in transportation and storage. And that's just to keeping a car going. Every one of these vehicles cost thousands to get here, on top of what they cost to buy. A lot of people around here don't own one. Those who do take good care of them so they last.
I guess that explains why my dad is driving a truck that's at least 15 years old, when it sounds like, by normal standards, he could afford better. I quietly take stock of the vehicles we pass as if to prove Jonah's words. They're all older, worn models with plenty of bumps and bruises. Fords, GMCs, Hondas, a lot of pickup trucks. Not a shiny BMW in sight. A worn white sedan with orange writing on its side that reads, "Taxi cab," and a phone number drives by, surprising me. "You have cabs here?" Jonah snorts.
"Plenty of those. More per capita than any other U.S. city. $5 flat will get you anywhere you want to go in town. 7 to the airport."
I wish I had known. I would have gladly called one instead of dealing with Jonah. Though he's being civil now. More than civil, actually. He's using full sentences. Maybe that's why I dare ask, "Have you lived in Alaska your whole life?" There's a long pause, and I wonder if maybe I misread his civility, if maybe I should have shut up while I was ahead.
"I was born in Anchorage. We moved to Vegas when I was 12. I moved back about 10 years ago."
Vegas. Really? Sharp blue eyes glance over at me quickly.
"Why do you say it like that?"
No reason. I've never met anyone who actually lived in Vegas. My only weekend there was a drunken, costly, 3-day blur with Diana and 2 other friends for our 21st birthdays. By the time I curled up in my seat to fly home, I was more than ready to leave.
"Yeah, well, there's more to it than the Strip. Most locals won't be caught dead down there."
"Do you miss it?"
"Hell no. Couldn't wait to get out of there."
"Why?" He sighs, as if he doesn't have the energy to answer a question like that.
"Too fast, too loud, too materialistic. Take your pick."
The exact opposite of banger, I'm quickly gathering. But why this part of Alaska? I mean, why didn't you go back to Anchorage if that's where you grew up? It looks nice, peaceful, from what I saw anyway. And from what I read, it's a real city.
"I like it better here."
I'm sensing he could say a lot more but has no interest to. Still, I'm too curious to stop asking questions. How'd you end up working for my dad anyway?
"One of the pilots was an old friend of my father's. He hooked me up."
Mention of Jonah's father reminds me of what Agnes revealed yesterday. I hesitate. It's a sensitive topic, but it's also a connection between us. "I heard your dad had cancer too." I hold my breath, waiting for him to say something. When his father died, from what type of cancer, how long he suffered, how long he fought. I want to ask if Jonah was close to his father, if it still hurts. Maybe that bit of information will make him seem more human. Maybe he'll soften when he realizes that we have at least one thing in common.
"Yup."
His hand tightens around the steering wheel, and I instantly regret bringing it up. Though, I think I got the answer as to whether it still hurts. I quickly search for a new, safe topic to switch to. I find it in the form of a golden yellow sign. "Hey, you guys have a Subway. I don't even like subs, and yet I'm excited for no other reason than it's something familiar." He relaxes his grip.
"It's the only chain you'll find around here."
"So, I guess that means no Starbucks," I hazard, topping it off with a playful grin. Icy blue eyes flicker to me a moment before adjusting to the road.
"Nope."
"Is there somewhere I can grab a coffee?" We come to a stoplight, the first one so far. With his hand still curled around the steering wheel, he points a long index finger, the nail bitten off, cuticle cracking, at a forest green building.
"Right there."
A white Bristol board sign hangs over the darkened entryway. "Berta's Coffee and Bait Shop," I read out loud.
"Yeah, you know, fish eggs, leeches, herring, shad, chunks of dead."
"I get it," I cut him off with a cringe. "But in a coffee shop? That's got to be a health code violation."
People need to diversify to keep their businesses afloat around here.
I guess. I'm still cringing when I notice the ramshackle building next to it, a medley of ill-sized plywood boards and metal sheets and worn paint, and a wooden board slapped to the front that has Szechuan's scrawled across it with, I'm guessing, a wide paintbrush.
Oh my God. Is that a Chinese food restaurant? Because it looks like a backyard clubhouse built out of scrap material by a bunch of 10-year-old boys.
It's been there forever.
That place would be shut down for a slew of health and building code violations in a day anywhere else in North America. Where the hell am I? I mumble, aiming my phone. Wait until Diana sees this. I feel his steady gaze on me.
Do you want me to pull over so you can run in and see if they have a fresh pot of...
No, thanks. I'll wait. I'd rather deal with this pounding headache than accept a coffee from someone who most certainly didn't wash their hands enough after sticking them into a vat of writhing earthworms. I think there's a small smile lurking behind that beard, but it's hard to see. Still, I feel an odd sense of accomplishment at the possibility that this teddy bear, by Agnes's description, might not despise me as much as he seemed to initially. He makes another turn. Either my dad's directions on that note were wrong, or Jonah took me the long way, and we're now on Main Street, a wider road lined with more of the same simple siding-clad buildings, only with business signs. Bangor seems to have all the service staples, law office, dentist, chamber of commerce, bank, even a real estate broker, as well as a string of sandwich, pizza, and family restaurants that are basic, but don't look like they're serving up Listeria. My stomach grumbles as we roll past Gigi's Pizza and Pasta, a cute, upbeat yellow place with more windows than anyone else on the street. But the neon open sign by the door isn't illuminated. If it were, I'd ask Jonah to drop me off there and I'd catch a cab home. Jonah swerves into a parking lot and pulls in next to an ATV. A giant warehouse is ahead, finished off with an earthy brown siding and a gently sloped black tin roof. The sign above the door reads, Myers Grocery, Clothing, and Household Goods. Look, if you want to wait, he pops his door open and with sleek moves exits the truck and rounds the front of it before I have a chance to finish my sentence. And then he simply stands there, arms folded across his broad chest, waiting for me. I guess I'm going grocery shopping with Jonah, I mutter to myself. At least this way he can't abandon me here. I hope. I slide out of the passenger seat, adjusting my fitted sweater over my hips and waist. Jonah's eyes catch the subtle move, and then he turns away, looking wholly disinterested. That's fine, because I'm not trying to attract him. What would be his type anyway, I wonder? I couldn't even hazard a guess other than to say, hardy. He marches for a set of stairs that lead to the main door. And despite the fact that he's a jerk, I can't help but admire the curves of his shoulders and arms as I follow him in. He has an impressive upper body, the upper body of someone who lifts weights regularly. His lower body, I can't discern. His jeans are too loose to show any real definition. Plus, he should tighten his belt a few notches because they're sagging on his ass. I look up in time to meet his eyes. Jonah has caught me, and it probably looks like I'm ogling him. I thought you were in a rush. I nod my chin to urge him forward, feeling my cheeks burn. He tugs on a shopping cart handle, pulling it free from the rack.
Where to first?
Good question. One of the luxuries of still living at home is that I don't have to think about meal planning. Sure, when my friends and I head off for a weekend, we'll stop at the grocery store and load up a cart with burgers and the like, but Mom takes care of planning food for the week. When was the last time I had to do it? Have I ever? The interior of Myers is pure chaos, I realize, as I take in the sea of products that seem to occupy every available square inch of real estate. This is not what I'm used to. On the rare occasion that I have to grab something we've run out of, it's at the local Loblaws, a sleek, stylish store with spacious aisles, polished floors, and tempting produce displays. As far as aesthetics go, this place sorely pales by comparison, with everything from its flickering low-voltage lights above to the scuffed gray floors and narrow aisles, the shelves crammed with product and topped with brown cases for excess stock. Islands of soft drinks and toilet paper sit on pallets, creating obstacles for carts to navigate around. Everywhere I look, there are oversized sale signs, but the prices marked can't possibly be right because $10 for a box of Cheerios? $13 for a 12-pack of bottled water? $32 for toilet paper? The one thing Myers does have, I note with delight, is a small coffee bar next to a glass case of cream pies and icing-laden cupcakes to my right. A whiteboard hangs on the wall above the metal chest-level counter with a handwritten menu of hot drink options. I make a beeline to where a young girl hides behind the stacks of paper takeout cups. I'm desperate for caffeine. A painful throb flares in my head as if to emphasize my need. Her near-black eyes do a once-over of me. What size? The largest you have. A latte with soy, please. We don't make those. I glance up at the sign to double-check that I'm not hallucinating. It says you do. Well, yeah, we make lattes. Normal ones. $6.50, American dollars, for a grocery store latte is not normal, I want to say, but I bite my tongue. It's the same thing, just made with soy milk. I don't have soy milk, she says slowly, as if to help me understand. I take a deep, calming breath. Okay, do you have almond milk or cashew or... My words drift with her shaking head. So, I guess you don't want the latte then? She sounds put out. No, I guess I don't. I can't recall the last time I stood in front of a barista, if that's what I can even call her, and was told that there was no alternative option. I don't think it's ever happened.
She giving you problems, Kaylee?
Jonah asks, coming up from behind me. Hey, Jonah. The girl, Kaylee, grins at him, dismissing me entirely. She isn't so much a girl as woman, I now realize, as I study her more closely. Early 20s, maybe mid, with large almond-shaped eyes and high cheekbones. Not a smudge of blush or a swipe of a mascara brush has touched her face today. She's naturally pretty, and the fact that her brunette ponytail is masked by a hairnet doesn't detract from that. I wore a hairnet once, when I was 16 and rebellious, and decided that I couldn't handle working weekends for my mother at her florist shop, so I got a job at the cupcake shop 3 doors down. I lasted one Saturday before I went back to my mother because, as difficult as she seemed, she didn't make me wear an unflattering headpiece. Why aren't you flying today? The girl asks, her idle hands lazily stacking and restacking paper cups, her hawkish gaze never leaving Jonah's face.
I'll be in the sky within the hour, as soon as I'm off daycare duty.
He tips his head toward me.
This is Ren's daughter. She hasn't figured out where she is yet.
In hell at the moment, I snap, my irritation flaring unexpectedly. I'm hungry, my head is pounding, and he's making jokes at my expense. He gives me a flat look before leaning in to rest his sinewy forearms on the counter.
Hey, any chance you can grab a carton of whatever it is she needs off the shelf and make her that coffee so she'll be a bit more pleasant?
His voice has turned soft, gravelly. Kaylee's lips twist with reluctance. Yvette doesn't like us doing that. It always ends up going to waste.
Don't worry. We'll take the carton with us and pay for it up front. Won't cost you a thing. Come on, Kaylee. You'd be doing me a huge favor.
I can only see his profile, but by the way his eyes are crinkling, I can guess the look he's giving her. Is he flirting with her? Does the Yeti actually know how to flirt? Kaylee rolls her eyes but then tilts her head to the side, her lips twisting playfully. Sure, Jonah. Give me a sec. I can't help the momentary glare, but then cover it up with a wide, fake smile. Thanks so much, Kaylee. I'm so sorry for any inconvenience. She ignores me, disappearing around the corner, her hips swaying slightly. She has a thing for Jonah. She's hoping for something romantic between them. That, or something romantic has already happened between them. Both scenarios mean she's clearly masochistic. Also, possibly a psychopath. I feel Jonah's gaze on me. What? He shakes his head.
Couldn't wait to get home, could you?
You know what? Thanks for the ride. You can head on over to fly your little planes now. I'll be fine. I'm expecting him to jump at the chance to ditch me, but instead, he leans against the shopping cart handle, amusement in his eyes.
And how are you going to get everything the 5 miles home?
I'll borrow a duffel bag for the essentials and fly the rest later, I mock, staring pointedly at him, though a cab would be easy enough to grab. He holds a hand up in a silent greeting to an older gentleman who passes by.
Relax. Your clothes will be here today or tomorrow.
Today, thanks to Agnes and Billy. And not you.
Billy?
Jonah's brows pop, and then his head tips back. An unexpectedly loud, boisterous laugh sails from his mouth, turning numerous heads in the vicinity.
Billy spent last night with his hands in your things.
He did not, I scoff.
Brought your suitcases home, emptied them onto his bed, got naked, and rubbed his...
Oh my God, stop it! Gross! I don't know whether to cry or laugh. He's joking, right? He must be joking. His expression makes me think he might not be joking.
You might want to wash your panties before you wear them again.
My face is twisted with disgust when an older Alaska Native woman wearing an oversized New York Knicks sweatshirt and a navy and orange floral pink headscarf over short gray hair sidles her cart up to Jonah. She settles a hand on his forearm.
I could hear Telukaruk's laugh from a mile away.
What did she just call him? Her face reminds me of Agnes's, though age and weight has made her cheeks heavy and her wrinkles much more prominent. She's also short like Agnes. I'd put her at 5'1", which makes the height difference between her and Jonah almost comical. Jonah peers down at her, and even that beard can't hide his genuine smile.
What are you doing down the river, Ethel?
Gathering supplies.
She waves a weathered hand at her sparsely filled cart of rice, pancake mix, and a can of Coke.
How's Josephine and the baby?
Mention of a baby cracks the old lady's face into a wide grin.
He's getting nice and fat, finally. And Josephine's strong.
All you villagers are strong.
Ethel grunts, shrugging off what I sense is a high compliment from Jonah, her dark eyes shifting to me.
Who's she? Wren's daughter. She's visiting.
She nods as she studies me intently, her wise gaze impossible to read. I squirm under the scrutiny, offering a soft, hi.
She's pretty,
Ethel finally states with a nod, as if passing her approval of me. As if I'm not standing right here.
Albert bring you down?
Jonah asks, quickly changing topics.
Yeah, he's at the hospital, getting his hand looked at. What's wrong with his hand?
Cut himself at the fish camp back in June.
Jonah frowns.
Must be bad for him to come all the way down to see a doctor.
It's festering,
she admits solemnly.
The healer said it will get worse without medicine.
Then she lets out a bark of laughter.
I told him I would cut his hand off at the wrist while he was sleeping before the infection spread. I guess he believed me.
That's because he knows you,
Jonah says, shaking his head. He's smiling, but I get the sense that he believes the old woman might carry out her threat.
When are you coming to the village again?
We'll see.
He shrugs noncommittally.
Make it soon. We'll have meat for you.
She turns her eyes on me again.
Jonah saved my Josephine and her baby's lives. She went into labor too early, and he flew in to get them when it was dangerous, when no one else would. The baby was blue when he came out, and Josephine lost a lot of blood.
Just doing my job.
Jonah mutters, cutting her off suddenly, as if uncomfortable.
Tell Albert I said hi, and learn how to gut a fish.
Ethel chuckles, patting his arm affectionately.
See you up the river.
I watch her shuffle away. Is that true, that you went and got them when no one else would?
It was a bit of snow. She's exaggerating,
he mumbles, turning away from me to search the aisles, for Kaylee, perhaps, or just to close off a conversation he clearly doesn't want to have. Is it that he's modest? Because something tells me that old woman doesn't exaggerate much, and that when she labels conditions as dangerous, they're apocalyptic by other people's standards. Kaylee appears at the counter again, distracting my thoughts. She holds up a carton of soy milk that I've had once before.
You said large, right?
Yeah, but I hesitate. You wouldn't happen to carry the Silk brand? It's the only one I've had that doesn't taste like liquid chalk. Her face sours with irritation.
This is the only one we have. Do you still want it?
I sigh. Sure. Extra foam, please. Kaylee's brow furrows.
Our little princess will have it however you can make it, and thank you for going out of your way for her.
Jonah interrupts in an overly patient tone.
Right, Calla?
Of course. My cheeks burn. How does he make me feel absurd over ordering a simple thing like a coffee the way I like it? He nods toward the produce section, letting go of the shopping cart with a little push.
Why don't you go ahead and I'll bring it to you as soon as it's ready?
Is he offering because he wants a few moments alone with Kaylee, or a few moments away from me? A few minutes to mock our little princess. I decide I don't care either way. Sounds great. I stroll away with a wide, satisfied smile. Because Jonah will have to fork over the $6.50 for my shitty cup of coffee.
So we're done here, right?
Jonah pushes the cart toward the cashier lines, stealing a quick glance at his watch. No sooner had he handed me my steaming paper cup, without a sleeve to keep my fingertips from being scorched, than he seized control of the cart. I'd say he was being helpful, but given that I had to speed walk the aisles to keep up with him, it likely had more to do with getting out of here fast than any kindness. To his credit, though, he hasn't ditched me yet. I think so? I choke down the last of what might be the worst coffee ever known to man and toss it into a nearby bin. At least my headache is beginning to fade. But I don't know how I'm going to survive the week drinking this crap. I wonder if Amazon delivers here.
Last chance,
he warns me. I scan the cart. Fruit smoothies for breakfast, green salads with chicken breast for lunch and dinner, along with a bag of almonds, a dozen eggs, ingredients for sandwiches, and bananas for snacks. Basically what I eat at home. I also remembered the $20 can of bug spray that will likely cause DEET poisoning thanks to Jonah. He strolled down the household goods aisle past an ATV and boat motor because apparently in Alaska, you can buy ATVs and boat motors at the grocery store, and tossed it in without asking, announcing loud enough for everyone two aisles over to hear that if I insist on jogging naked, it's the only mosquito repellent that will work. And yet, I can't ignore this nagging feeling that I've forgotten something.
Come on, let's go. Get Ren to bring you back if you forgot something.
As if. I let out a derisive snort. He's too busy making a buck to make time for his own daughter. He doesn't even want me here. Jonah scowls.
Who told you that?
No one has to. It's pretty damn clear. If it weren't for Agnes, I wouldn't even know he was sick. Agnes, dinner tonight. That's what I was forgetting. Red or white?
What?
Jonah frowns in confusion, caught off guard by my question. Agnes invited me and my dad to dinner tonight. I need to bring something for her. Plus, I think I hear a bottle of vodka calling my name to get me through this week. Red or white wine? He waves it away.
Don't bother. She doesn't expect it.
I'm not going to show up to someone's house empty-handed, I mutter, my eyes roving the store signage, searching for the liquor aisle that we obviously missed. Who does that?
I do it all the time,
he retorts, as if proud of that fact. Yeah, well, it was a rhetorical question, but I shouldn't be at all surprised that the Yeti doesn't understand basic etiquette. Meanwhile, My mother had me bringing cookies and cupcakes to my friends' houses as a thank you for arranged playdates when I was as young as 8. It's considered good manners to bring something for the hostess. Like wine, I say calmly, with as little judgment as I can muster in my voice. He levels me with that icy gaze for 3 long beats.
Aggie doesn't drink. Your dad will have the occasional beer.
Great. Maybe if I show up with a 6-pack, he'll feel obligated to talk to me for more than a minute. Where can I get...
You can't. It's a dry community. They don't sell alcohol in Bangor.
What? I feel my face twist with shock. You're lying. His eyebrows arch.
You're arguing with me about this?
What the hell is this? The 1920s prohibition?
No. It's Western Alaska, where alcoholism is a serious problem,
he says, his voice carrying with it a condescending edge.
People will drink so much they pass out in snowbanks and freeze to death in winter.
So no one can buy any alcohol then? That seems a bit drastic.
Nope. Not even you.
He's enjoying this way too much. Well, how does my dad get beer then? I counter. You said he drinks beer.
He brings it home with him when he goes to Anchorage or Seward. And no, I'm not flying you there to grab you a damn 6-pack.
His perfectly straight white teeth glint with a wide, spiteful smile.
I guess you'll have to forego proper dinner etiquette for tonight.
That's fine. I'll buy her flowers. I eye the green pail next to the cash register, where 3 sad-looking bouquets of lemon-yellow daisies sit, the bright dye in the petals unable to hide the browning edges. My florist mother would die witnessing this, I think, as I grab one and trail Jonah to the last cashier, all while glaring at his back. A dry community? What do people order at the bar on a Friday night? Cocoa and cream sodas? Come to think of it, I didn't notice any flashing neon lights or the word bar anywhere. So what the hell do people do around here for fun? Shouldn't you be working? The cashier, a white woman in her 50s with blonde hair, soft blue eyes, and a slight southern accent, the kind that's faded with time, smiles up at Jonah, while stealing frequent, curious glances at me. I'll take that over being blatantly stared at by every other person in this place. Elderly women hunched over bins of discounted canned vegetables, staring at me through cataract-clouded gazes. Stock boys, pausing with their hands in midair, gripping produce, staring at me, my face, my chest, my shoes, as I edge past. Middle-aged ladies in unflattering jeans and clunky shoes, their hair pulled into messy ponytails, quieting in mid-conversation, staring at me like I'm some sort of circus sideshow. Or, more likely, like they know I'm an outsider and they're trying to figure out what on earth brought me to Bangor, Alaska. I'm quickly sensing that everyone knows everyone around here, and if they don't directly know them, then it's through 1 or 2 degrees of separation at most, and they'll strike up a conversation to find out exactly how. Coming to Myers seems to be a social activity as much as a life necessity. Shoppers meander up and down the aisles, blocking paths as they slow to comment on the sale on ground beef and lettuce, or the forecasted break in the rain, or who's coming in from Anchorage. No one is in much of a hurry. No one except Jonah.
Hey, Bobby.
Jonah starts chucking produce onto the belt.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be. I was ambushed on my way in.
I roll my eyes. Jonah's gone from babysitter to hostage. Thanks. I've got this. I yank the green pepper out of his hand before he can toss and bruise it, too. Do you mind bagging things over there? Away from me. I punctuate my words with a little push against his bicep, rock hard beneath my palm. The cashier, Bobby, continues ringing things up, her fingers flying over the keyboard with memorized vegetable codes. George said they're calling for a few clear days this week. I'm tired of getting my hopes up. Still, it'd be a nice change from all the rain.
You should be used to the rain by now,
Jonah says gruffly, stuffing my groceries into brown paper bags. Is anyone ever used to it? There's a pause and then, so, is this your sister or a cousin? She's asking Jonah, but she's looking at me.
This is Ren's daughter, Calla.
Her quick fingers stall. Oh, right. George said something about you going to Anchorage to pick her up. George is my husband, she explains, now addressing me directly. Him and Jonah's dad used to fly together in the Air Force. Now he flies for Ren. I'm guessing this George guy was the connection to Alaska Wild that Jonah mentioned earlier. And this Bobby lady has also given me another piece of information. Jonah's father was a pilot in the U.S. Air Force, and it sounds like Jonah followed in his footsteps as far as flying goes anyway. That must be his father's hat. Bobby shakes her head. I forgot Ren had a daughter all those years ago. Gosh, it's been forever. You and your mom ended up in... She lets that hang, waiting for me to fill in the blank. Toronto. She gives a small nod, like that answers an unspoken question. And this is your first time here? Since we left, yeah. So, you figured it was a good time for a visit?
As good a time for a vacation as any, right?
Jonah answers for me, his piercing eyes on mine, the warning in them clear. From what Agnes said, my dad doesn't want people knowing about his cancer diagnosis yet. I guess that includes his employees. Yeah. Had some time to burn, and I've always wanted to see Alaska, I add, solidifying our lie. Bobby gives me a polite smile, one that says she was hoping for a juicier answer than that, and then finishes ringing up the rest of my groceries. My eyes bulge at the final tally as I count out the bills. How do two bags of groceries cost that much? Bobby laughs. That's some sticker shock, huh? Well, you enjoy your time in Alaska, Calla. And be careful, she warns, nodding Jonah's way. Or that one will charm you so much you won't want to leave. Yes, I'm already struggling to control myself. My voice drips with sarcasm. Her head crooks, confusion filling her face. And my mouth drops. Oh my God, you're not kidding. An awkward chuckle sails from her thin lips. Make sure you send that husband of mine home right after work, Jonah. He gets to talking, and next thing he knows, the sun has gone down. Jonah throws a flat-faced wink her way as he scoops up the grocery bags in one arm, his biceps straining beneath his cotton sleeve.
Will do.
I trail him out, cradling the bouquet of near-spent flowers, feeling countless eyes on my back. I can't help myself. So, if you're charming, what would Bobby consider an asshole?
There's one right now.
I follow his nod and find a reflection of myself in a window. He's quick with the comebacks, I'll give him that much. Jonah peers up to the sky, squinting, and I can tell he's searching for a looming rain cloud. People really obsess about the weather around here.
Why wouldn't they? Strong winds, thick fog. Too much rain or snow, any of it will ground us for hours, a day, even longer sometimes.
His boots scrape along the dusty ground.
People rely on planes for food, medicine, doctors, mail, everything.
I try to ignore the heavy gazes of two teenaged boys of maybe 16, with cans of Coke in their hands, gawking openly at me. And they stare even more than they obsess about the weather, I mutter, more to myself.
They're not used to seeing a real-life Barbie doll is all.
I frown. Did he just call me... I am not a Barbie doll.
No.
He gives me a sideways glance, amusement in his eyes.
Fake hair, fake face, fake nails.
His eyes dip to my chest before flashing away.
Is anything on you real?
My jaw drops. These are not fake. And I've never had anyone insinuate otherwise. They're not even particularly impressive.
I don't care one way or the other. You wondered why they're staring at you. That's why.
He says in a bored tone. He pops the hatch of his SUV and then sets the grocery bags in. And I simply gape at him, astonished. At least 25 people said hello to him in Myers. All those little waves and friendly greetings, as if people are actually happy to see him. Bobby called him charming. Agnes claims he's a teddy bear. Ethel talks about him like he walks on water. Am I in some sort of alternate universe?